When Bill Gates invented the computer and the internet, Steve Jobs just stole it right out from under him and made Mac. Luckily, Bill Gates was still smart enough to make a lot of money off his Windows computers. But I'm tired of people saying Apple's innovative. They're not even innovative. I mean, look at the iPad. All it is a screen. We've had computer screens ever since Bill Gates invented it in 1976.
The best 30 plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Erfan Elijah, joined by team biggest glutes, bestest glutes. That's Leander Caney in the background.
I'm flexing my glutes right now.
Are you? Me too. All day, every day. That's how you get the award for team biggest glutes, bestest glutes, Leander. Alex Zeltier Heath is here. Buster Hein is here. Welcome, guys.
Hey.
And we have so much good stuff to talk about this episode. Let me just clue you guys in a little bit. So we're going to be talking about, well, I'm going to raise this question. We talked a little bit about this last show, at which point Alex poo-pooed me. Is Apple working on an automobile? I feel like there's some smoke here that we keep seeing. And I got to wonder, it may not be a self-driving automobile, but are they working on a car? We'll bring up some new information that came out this week. And we are going to be telling you our recommendations for backpacks, backpacks that we like for DSLR and Apple gear. And we're going to be wrapping up the show with a kind of a new test segment we're calling Crossing the Streams.
There's something very important I forgot to tell you.
What?
Don't cross the streams.
And this will be where
Dirty.
It is. It's going to be talking about all of the internet stuff that Leander likes to watch in his free time.
Free time? I watch it all day at work.
He just leaves it going on a loop. We're going to be talking about the TV shows that we are all currently into. We have rarely talked about that on this show. Every once in a while we might bring it up. But I'm curious to hear what you guys are watching. And I know Alex just watched the premiere of Better Call Saul, the new AMC joint that's...
Yeah, I also watched the first 20 minutes of House of Cards Season 3 before Netflix pulled it, but we can go into that later.
They accidentally released it?
Yeah.
Oh, like, wow. 2 minutes.
I was going to say.
You only saw the credits?
Cool. No,
the opening sequence is phenomenal. Leander.
I got it buffered like 20 minutes in, so I've seen about that much.
When does that actually come out?
Like 2 more weeks.
Okay.
February 27th, I think.
They're on Season 3 of that already?
Yep.
Wow, I haven't even watched Season 1 or Season 2.
You haven't watched any of Season House of Cards?
No.
Oh, it's so
surprise,
good.
Surprise. We're going to try and keep... We should try to keep Crossing the Streams spoiler-free. So yeah, no talking right. About Batman like that one time where we did and we gave away the entire plot. and everyone was super pissed off because we accidentally revealed the plot.
We're not Bruce Wayne becomes Batman?
Dude, shh. There's people that probably still haven't seen that. Before we hop into all the fun, I want to thank Squarespace for supporting this episode. Squarespace 7 is a completely new redesigned product from Squarespace. It has a redesigned interface, integrations with Getty Images and Google Apps. They have new templates for you to choose from and an incredible feature called Cover Pages, which is incredible. So immersive. It's just a one single page website that allows you to add your different media or your social media to one page. You can check out the all-new Squarespace. Head on over to squarespace.com and enter the offer code CULTCAST at checkout for 10% off any order. By the way, you can sign up for a 2-week free trial with just an email address. They don't ask for your credit card information or anything like that. I also am thrilled to be supported by Varidesk. They don't call us team biggest glutes, bestest glutes for nothing. Varidesk makes these really nifty stand-up desks that are somewhat portable. You just kind of plop them down on your existing desk. And they allow you to work in a standing position, in a sitting position, with a desk that you already have. And if you guys have heard me talk about Varidesk before, you know my glutes owe them a lot. Because my glutes are rock hard now. Because I stand all day. And not only do you earn the badge of bestest glutes, biggest glutes. I'm starting to mix that up now. You actually feel a lot better about yourself when you stand all day. In fact, I have been not in my home office as much this week, and I've been working from various locations where I've had to sit all day. And I just feel like an unhealthy blob. When you have to sit all day long and you're used to standing for, 3-4 hours of your day, you just feel awful. And you realize standing is the way to go. It keeps your metabolism up. So you burn more calories by doing absolutely nothing more than just standing while you work. And you get a little bit tired while you're standing. Eventually, you're going to want to sit down. And so Varidesk's models, they have five to choose from, by the way, go to a standing position or a sitting position in 3 seconds. They have models that support single monitors. They have models that support multi-monitors. And I think probably one of the best things about Varidesk, besides the fact that they're one of the most inexpensive ways to get into a standing desk, is you don't have to have a ton of space. So you can put it on the desk that you already have, as I said, and most standing desks occupy a huge part of your room, maybe an entire wall. So Varidesk doesn't do that. You just put it down wherever you need it, get it set up, and you'll be standing throughout your day. You'll feel better, and maybe you too could be part of the biggest glutes, bestest glutes club. What do you say, guys? Should we have them send pictures and maybe nominate a new member?
Yeah, that's not a whole flicker group.
On second thought, that doesn't sound like such a good idea. So, well, you can just tell us on Twitter if your glutes have gotten as rock hard as ours. I want to thank Varidesk for supporting this episode. Check out Varidesk.com, V-A-R-I-desk.com, the least expensive, highest quality way that I know of to get into a standing desk. Thank you, Varidesk. Okay, let's start with the big news this week, guys. Alex, you're going to get mad at me, but I'm going to bring this up anyway. Is Apple working on a Apple car? I say this because we saw some smoke this week. John Gruber even wrote about this, saying he hasn't heard anything about it, but he listed two reasons why he thought that Apple might be. A, it's a big industry that Apple can make a lot of money in. And actually, I don't recall the second point. But it was incredibly...
The second point was that Apple's execs have been interested in cars for a long time.
Yes, thank you, Leander. And Buster, you actually wrote about Johnny Ive's collection of cars, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, well, right, totally.
It really came from Leander's research, but yeah, I did.
Okay, so Leander penned it and you just wrote the title?
Yeah. Do you credit that in Brian Williams style?
I believe there was some reporting in there from Brian Williams, if I'm remembering this correctly. And he has like a whole assortment of pretty nice cars, I would imagine. I mean, he obviously has enough money to buy whatever he wants.
Oh, yeah.
So
Benzes, Bentleys, everything.
I think he had a Fiat in there, like a really old, terrible Fiat. Yep. But Steve Jobs had talked about building an iCar. And so this week, a story came out from Business Insider, which we don't know if how accurate it is, but they were saying that a lot of employees from Tesla are being recruited by Apple, getting bonuses as high as $250,000 to jump ship and go to Apple. And I think kind of the premise of the piece was Apple's going after all these people at Tesla who are well-versed in designing and building cars. Why would they be doing this if they weren't developing some type of automobile? And then, of course, last show, we talked about the Apple leased car that was driving around that looked like it could have been self-driving. Alex thought it was a Apple mapping car. Buster, what do you think?
See, I don't know about the van. I think the van was like some crazy, like new, like street level flyover 3D thing.
Okay.
But, or possibly, who knows, like a retrofitting accessory to turn your car into a self-driving car, but I doubt it. But like an iCar sounds really possible because they've talked about it for a really long time anyway.
Mm-hmm. Alex, are you still on the there's no way this is happening bandwagon?
I'm on the fence.
Are you?
I've heard a lot of interesting theories about why they could be into doing a car. And honestly, I don't think if they are going to do a car, we'll see it within even the next 5 years. It would probably be like 10 years. And then even if things keep going well, you know, like if their stock keeps doing well and they keep expanding, right, and they don't screw stuff up and, you know, like things that I don't see it happening anywhere near in the near future.
It's a huge project to make a car. It's way different than making an iPhone. Like an iPhone, it's just you can throw components in made from other companies and sexy it up. But a car, you have to do everything from the ground up.
It took them 3 years to do the watch, and the watch still doesn't have, you know, all day battery life barely. You know, so it's like
another thing I just considered though is Tesla. It's something to give Tesla a run for its money, and Tesla did open up all of its patents to anybody who wants to compete with them. So Apple can basically take whatever they did too and make it even better.
Was it all their patents, or was it just their charging?
I think it's for battery patents. I think,
Which is arguably one of the biggest parts of the car.
Yeah, and Apple has done a lot of research into batteries and has a lot of battery patents itself. But yeah, I know Leander has some stuff too.
Leander's being awfully quiet over there.
Well, yeah, I was just trying to work up I'm working on a story for tomorrow.
I just wasn't paying attention. So what are we talking about?
I think that's an interesting. You know, like there's a whole bunch of. The car world, right? Is there's a convergence now with the tech world that's never happened before. So that's an interesting.
That's a good point.
Point, right? And not just with telematics and all the sort of intelligence, but also like I said with battery technology and motors and stuff like that. You know, it becoming electrified. That's an interesting thing to note. I mean, I'm kind of skeptical, but I was just digging around today. I was looking at the Apple campus too, and they're building a huge R&D center there in phase two. So as well as the donut, the spaceship. Off to the side, there's a couple of really big buildings that are going to be for R&D. And that's for like a couple of 2,500 employees. And you're like, 2,500 R&D employees? Wow. I mean, that's a lot.
Yeah.
What are they going to be doing? And then there's a huge R&D center. It's like a big three or four story building. Oh, it's all frosted glass, so you can't see in, of course. And it's, I know they have test labs and, they do radio antenna work and all that kind of stuff. And they do a lot of stress testing. And maybe Apple has, facilities all over Cupertino right now and they want to consolidate it. But I don't know. I thought that was a pretty big R&D center for, for iPhones and iPads.
There's a racetrack inside.
Yeah, right. Well, then, of course, the donut looks like a big racetrack too, right? They can go fly around. But there's also a bunch of Apple car designers on Apple's design team who've already been there already. A couple of them, have done some really interesting concept cars, including one for BMW where it's a fabric covered car that has a skeleton that changes shape according to the driving conditions. So when it's going faster, it sleeks out, it actually the when the lights come on, it opens up this area like an eyelid opening up. Mm-hmm. To reveal the headlights. So it's a shape-shifting fabric-covered car, totally weird and cool. And that was designed by one of the designers now on Apple's design team, working under Johnny Ive. So, there's some interesting stuff there. And of course, Mark Newsom, right? Yeah. He did a concept car. That was back in 1999. But actually, the interesting thing about that is the dashboard. That was kind of funny for a 1999 dashboard. It's just a series of buttons, and they look very sort of Apple-like. Mm-hmm. Very simple, just a long line of buttons.
I think the idea that Apple might be building a car is really exciting. And if they're going to do it, this is the time. I think we're kind of at this shift where we're moving from these dumb cars that have had the same kind of internal motors for forever to this new era of cars where they're electronic, they're powered by software like Tesla. And if Apple was going to get into the car game, it seems like now is the perfect time while Tesla is just kind of breaking ground on creating affordable electric cars. Do you think that it seems totally outlandish, Leander, that Apple might jump in and say, we also are going to do cars? Because it's one of those massive markets where they could really come in and revolutionize things as they like to do in all the industries they go into.
Yeah, I would have been very skeptical before in saying that it's way outside of their comfort zone and it's not part of the product portfolio. And there's a bunch of other problems too. But then if you look at what Tesla's doing, it's like Tesla contracted out the work to Lotus, right? And I don't know who's building their cars now. I think they're starting to build some of their own factories. They're interested in the battery factory. But, they contracted out the same way that Apple contracts out the manufacturing to Foxconn. And, it's really they're a design and marketing company. And that's really what Apple is as well. And, Tesla, they put all their showrooms in malls. They copied Apple's retail style, and instead of getting a big, big lot on the edge of town where they have balloons and big inflatable animals,
a missed opportunity, if you ask me.
Yeah, right. Well, instead, they're hiring out stores in high streets, and they're putting cars in the showrooms there. I don't know. It's really intriguing, and the infrastructure I think is starting to get put in place for electric cars, which I think was one of the big. the big problems with them, you know. But I don't know. I'm still skeptical, but it is interesting. It's great to think about. It's fun to think about.
Looking at it from just an electric car perspective, once those electric cars, I was actually thinking about buying an electric car, but unless you're going to spend $60,000, the cars just don't have any range is the big problem. Like the Nissan Leaf says it can go 75 miles on a charge, but in reality, it's more like 60, 65 miles. Well, that's 30 miles in each direction, right? So you can't go very far. But once you can get an electric car to 200 miles, 300 miles, which they can already do, they just can't do it for a cost that's low enough for regular consumers, that's when electric cars are really going to take off, I think. They're a blast to drive. What's that?
I was just going to say, it's exactly like every other market Apple has come into. Like, it's in the same stage right now of, like, it's there and it's a thing, but it's still growing and it's still figuring itself out. And there's still a lot of hurdles to overcome. Like, it's exact same as it was with the MP3 market, as it was with the PC market, as it was with the tablets and the wearables. And it's how Apple approaches every single market. So, yeah. But, I mean, I think the time frame is a lot wider than we would want or should, you know, expect in terms of, I mean, it's probably, like I said, like, you're going to be looking at 5 to 10 years, you know, minimum, I would say, before they're even close to doing any kind of a car. I mean, they can barely keep engineers to design their software for iOS and stuff. I mean, they have a huge talent they have a huge talent retention problem. And so, and Tesla's in a huge bidding war, and Tesla's winning. Tesla's hired like 150 Apple people. I think Apple's only hired like 50 from Tesla. So it's a long way to go before they can make anything. But I think they're definitely working on it. And I was thinking the other day about like how they said the Apple Watch is the most personal computer they've ever made, right? And they're a personal computer company. And if you think about it, cars are becoming computers now, and cars are super personal. People buy cars. That's the reason cars look so different. You know, a car is a manifestation of how somebody feels, or how, you know, what your personality or your status, you know. And it's the same reason that you buy a watch is the way you pick a car. You know, it's how it makes you feel. It's what you like about its features and stuff. So it totally, the rationale of creating a watch applies to a car as well. And people didn't think they would do like a gold, almost Swiss style watch. Like that was out of their portfolio. So it's clear that they don't mind going out of their quote unquote portfolio of what you would expect. So I think there's plenty of room there for it.
All right. So this got me thinking, this whole Apple jumping into cars got me thinking. So Apple's kind of getting maxed out in certain areas of the industry in which they participate. You know, like phones are becoming very saturated. The tablet market, obviously, the computer market. So what other industries could Apple go into and really just dominate? And I'd like to hear what you guys think. I also polled our listeners on our Facebook page, facebook.com/theCultCast. And there were some really great ones and some themes that I definitely saw. And then some just downright weird ones, as you would expect from our audience. But let me ask Leander. Leander, what industry, if you could pick one, would you like to see Apple go into and just really see Tim Cook just dominate it, like the dominatrix that is?
I'm a little worried about the domination thing. I was reading about HealthKit today and about the adoption by the health industry and Apple Pay as well, you know, like the rollout of Apple Pay. I mean, it looks like they're going to dominate those two industries. You know, I don't want to see necessarily Apple, I don't know, I guess there are worse companies to dominate industries. But, you know, Apple's getting really, really big, and it's becoming, you know, a really central part of these you know, these huge industries, these huge areas of our lives. And in the next few years, you know, seeing them, dominate payments and health and wearables
and your
phones
house
and your car, right at home. You know, it's I don't want, you know, I never liked monopolies. And I, you know, to be honest, I liked Apple when it was the scrappy underdog, not the... although, you know, they haven't demonstrated those, like this big monolithic company. I mean, they've got so many resources. I mean, like the post that you guys did this afternoon about it being as rich as, you know, like it's amongst the 150, it would be as in the league of 150's richest countries. You know, I look at the Spaceship Campus, you can see how vast and powerful this company is. And it's, I don't know, you know, so I don't know. I'm not sure I want them to dominate anything anymore. I quite like them as they are.
If Leander disappears without any trace, we know why. His opinions expressed here today are not reflected by me. I want Apple to dominate everything. Alex, what do you got?
Well, like I've been following HomeKit and stuff in the home automation space, and I think Apple not buying Nest is going to, like, people are going to look back and say that that was one of their biggest missed opportunities once the smart home stuff really reaches, you know, peak adoption where people are starting to actually buy all this stuff. Mm-hmm. Because I think Apple having its own hardware with its own software in the home would be super awesome. And they just don't have the bandwidth to be able to do that right now. But if they would have bought Nest and brought back all those Apple engineers Fidel took when he made Nest, they could probably do something really cool there. And right now they're just gonna have to rely on other people to do it. But it'd be really cool if, you know, your refrigerator and your stove and everything was Apple made and all worked together and was beautiful looking.
But to your point about Nest, I think that's really a good point, because how many people are going to buy a refrigerator that integrates with your iPhone? How many people are going to buy a toaster oven that integrates with your iPhone? But pretty much most people I know would buy a thermostat. You know, it's like that one thing that you would want to control when you're away from your house.
You hook people into it, with here's a little bit of functionality. Isn't this cool? Here's something else we can make. Oh, now that this is smart, we can make this smart, and it works with this. You know, you have to have everything working together for it to be cool. Just one smart thing in your home isn't that smart. And so it's when you have five things that all talk.
The thermostat's not, I mean, if you could think of a more obscure and, you know, difficult to install piece of home technology.
Well, the Nest isn't.
I mean, well, it is, really, if you think about it. It is. It totally is.
It can be. I heard that
you have to, like, find out if your thermostat is compatible with it, you know, and then you got to unscrew everything, fix up the
You got to get
that
and unscrew it and, put it in and screw it into the wall. And it's crazy. I mean, like, even putting a lock in a deadbolt is even more, is even easier than that. And, in fact, the easiest thing to do would be to have a TV. I mean, an Apple TV, that would be the center of your home hub universe. Mm-hmm. And I think the minute they come out with that, Nest is, you know, in trouble. And in fact, someone was telling me at CES that Nest, you know, everyone goes on about Nest and Tony Fidel's the next Steve Jobs. They've sold several hundred thousand units, whereas of their smart thermometer. Yeah. Honeywell has sold 13 million already, apparently. Yeah.
Are you kidding?
It's already killing them. Yeah.
Wow.
And they're, I think, you know, they're almost looking, I think if they were on their own, if Google hadn't bought them, they'd be really in trouble.
Yeah, and Honeywell is HomeKit, and I was talking to people that are a little more involved with HomeKit and, like, Honeywell's partnering with, and they're saying, yeah, that's why we went with Honeywell, is you've got that reach, because they're just a well-known brand. They're not even, like, a smart tech brand that only geeks know about. It's Honeywell. It's like, you know, so it's, yeah, totally. I mean, but at the same time, though, Nest hardware is great. Like, you can't, there's no denying it. Like, their software and their hardware is great, and it's very Apple-like. And if Apple would have bought them, you know, who knows what that could have led to.
Yeah, the Honeywell, they have a couple different models. It's the Lyric, right? That's the one that you guys are talking about, the Honeywell Lyric, which is kind of like the Nest competitor. That thing doesn't really have that great of reviews either. So I'm really surprised to hear that it's doing as well as it is. In fact, I'm looking at Amazon right now. It has a 2.5-star review on one model and a 3-star review on the other. And the Nest is usually, you know, 4, 4.5 stars.
Yeah.
So, but they must have the reach. They must have the distribution, as you said, Alex. They're probably in every Home Depot cheaper in America.
Yeah, they have huge distribution. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, I'm going to say space exploration. As long as we're just going to throw stuff out, I'm just going to drop that. And actually, I'm going to go ahead and thank, let's see here, someone on our Facebook page. Oh, Matthias Lin said, space travel, exclamation point. Here's why Apple needs to get into space travel. We've got all these crappy looking spaceships in space, right? you have two futures of space travel. You've got the spaceships that look like this, like the flying garbage trucks of the Alien movies, right? Where they just look really industrial and there's just metal everywhere and they look awful, but hey, they get the job done. That's the future of space travel without Apple. The future of space travel with Apple is, think, you know, like Cloud City, like Lando Calrissian. You know, there's, like, everything is perfectly designed and it floats there. You don't even know how. It just floats. It's like it just
looks
works.
Like those Naboo fighter jet thing.
Exactly.
Super sleek.
It's like the future in Star Wars, where all the spaceships are beautiful, all the aliens are beautiful, everyone's having a party. And those are the kind of spaceships that we're going to need if we're going to get to Mars in the style. I don't want to be flying on some, you know, floating garbage truck. And we're definitely going to need Apple to jump into this game if we're going to roll out to Mars in style. And, you know, if you get to Mars and there's aliens there and you're rolling up in some hoopty, how's that going to make the rest of Earth look? That's all I'm saying.
Embarrassing, yeah.
They're going to be like, bleep, blurp, blurp, making fun of us in their native language. That's not cool. Buster, did you contribute anything? Did you have anything?
No, I wasn't going to go with a really crazy outlandish one, but I was thinking something practical. Like the only companies that like rival Apple are energy companies like Enron. And it's also like really big into environmentalism and renewable energy. So if Apple got into the energy business, like really sexy solar panels or I don't know, like a at-home thermonuclear generator that you could install, that would be right. Like really big too.
Hey, as long as we're dreaming, I'm with you on that. Yeah. Before we move on, let me read you a couple from our Facebook page. Richard Jones says houses and cars. Lots of people said home automation, actually. Let's see here. I got a few suggestions for home pleasure apparatuses. Sexy toys. You use your imagination there. Which, you know, I guess Apple could improve those in some way, make them more user-friendly. Matthew Roz Hall says dentistry. Then we'd all look like, who's that guy with the really great teeth? No? Sure, does he have great teeth? Sure.
I can't remember.
Nick Nolte. Right. I was thinking of Nick Nolte. We'd all run around with just $1 million smile, just like that. Just like Nick Nolte, which actually, right. Now that I think about it, wouldn't be so bad. Yeah, exactly. I want to thank everyone who contributed their ideas on our Facebook page. I love reading through these guys. And thanks for the weird ones, too. Which there are a plethora of that I can't read on the show. Okay, before we move on, I want to thank Squarespace for supporting this episode. Squarespace is great. If you need a website, you absolutely, positively, definitely need to head to squarespace.com and get signed up for a free trial. They'll give you a 2-week free trial for free, and you'll be up and running in no time. Here's what makes Squarespace different than virtually everyone else on the internet. A, their design is front and center. They make everything look really great. Your website's going to look fantastic. And when you're using their website, you're going to have a great experience because they put a lot of attention into the detail on the way the website works, how you build your website. You don't need to know any code. And you're going to have a beautiful website that's super duper functional, up and running in no time. You can have a regular website. You can have a blog. You can have an e-commerce website. All this stuff is included with your Squarespace service. But one of my favorite features I wanted to touch on is their cover pages, which is new to Squarespace 7. The first time I saw one of these, I was really impressed. In all honesty, I really was, because it's just a single page that when you land on it, it takes up your entire browser window and it's incredibly immersive. And I think the first time I saw it, it was of this guy who climbs mountains for a living, and it was kind of like his experience. And it's a really basic page, but what they let you do is embed a video in the background, so the entire page is a video, or the entire page is an image that you select, or you can share music, or you can create a central hub for all of your social media accounts. It's a really excellent way to have a brand presence on the internet without having a bunch of complicated stuff on a website. It's just, boom, really immersive, have a really big video, really big picture, maybe some contact information. And if you are a professional who needs a website or you just need a presence on the internet to put your face to your name or, you know, connect people to your different places that you are on the web with your social media, Squarespace is a fantastic way to do it. They also give you 24/7 customer service, and their customer service is excellent. They're always there to help you out. And they are super duper inexpensive. You can get set up on Squarespace for less than $10 a month. Check out squarespace.com and sign up for their free trial. And if you like what you see, you want to keep your website going, just enter code CULTCAST at checkout. You get 10% off any order. That's whether if you order a month of service or a year of service. Doesn't matter. I want to thank Squarespace for supporting this episode. Let's talk about... Oh my gosh, we can't skip over this. This is a question from one of our listeners that I wanted to get your take on, guys. Buster, I know you're going to have something to say here. Taylor at TStop52 asked us, do you guys have any recommendations on backpacks for your gear, DSLR, and Apple Tech? something I could put my camera, computer, and iPad in. I definitely have some suggestions. What do you have, Buster?
I got two suggestions.
Boom. Let's hear them.
First is Lowepro's Photosport 200 AW backpack. It's awesome. Like if you're outdoors, like hiking, it has like room for a bladder, also your computer, and like my favorite feature, you just slip off one strap and it has like side access to your DSLR, plus like some compartments for lenses too. So it's like awesome for like on the go and shooting.
You said that was a Lowepro 200 AW.
Yeah, noted. It's awesome. And then I've been reviewing OGO's Ascent Pack as like a more like a city type backpack for like your MacBook, and I actually really like it. Like most of their backpacks look kind of nerdy and stuff, but
yeah, OGO, really?
Yeah, it doesn't look too bad. It's a new one. I don't think they've even come out with it yet, but it's like kind of got some like great coloring, and it's got a lot of protection for your MacBook, your iPad, tons of pockets, and it's got like this fancy case for like all your, like if you have like cameras or your iPhone or anything else too, like a protective case.
What model did you say it was?
It's called the Ascent Pack.
Ascent. Yeah, I'm with you on the whole nerdiness factor of OGO.
Yeah.
Every time I see an OGO bag, I literally purse my lips and roll my eyes, and I'm like, that thing is hideous.
Oh, I know. When they sent it to me, I had no interest in actually touching it. Like I told, before I even saw it, I told my little brother, you could just take it because I don't want it. And then I unwrapped it. I was like, oh, this actually looks kind of good.
You're pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
Okay. So the OGO sent the Lowepro 200 AW. Alex or Leander, do you guys have anything?
I got a plastic bag.
Does it say Safeway on the outside?
Yeah, exactly. So I like to have my stuff around it. I'm looking at it right now. Actually, it might be time for an upgrade. One of the handles.
You should go. You should move up to a Hefty. I hear those things are really durable.
Right. Actually, I need to get with it and get one of those, the non-disposable ones.
Yeah, you should try them. You know, they're not for everyone.
Trader Joe's bag.
And actually, the nice thing about carrying all your stuff around in a Hefty bag is every once in a while, someone will just hand you a couple dollars.
Right, and I'm set for lunch.
It's yeah, like free perfect. Lunch every day. Alex, do you have anything?
Yeah, when I go out with like my next camera, my like Sony NX7 camera and like some lenses, if I'm like going like hiking or something, I'll bring the Polar Excursion backpack. Mm-hmm. I don't know if y'all know about Polar stuff, but
don't
they're just
they
like
make,
a
heartbeat monitors and stuff?
No, they're like an outdoor hipster camper type brands.
Oh, of course they are.
Yeah, it's kind of like Herschel. It's like the new Herschel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's the new Herschel. I didn't realize. Yeah. Are people got hating like on Herschel a tag. Now?
Yeah, they got a tag that looks just like Herschel, too.
Yeah. That's hilarious. Okay.
But this backpack is pretty cool looking. You can get it in some different color combinations, and it's got a camera insert. It's $100, and it just looks cool. It's not something you're going to like want getting all dirty in the mountains. You know, like it's probably way too nice for Buster's rugged adventures, but for me, I'm timid and I don't venture too far from my
you stay by the highway.
He does car camping. Yeah, well, guys, car camping.
I mean I have a camper with electricity and running water, and I don't usually leave that.
An assortment of hair mousse.
Yeah, hair mousse, and you know, yeah, so that's my pick.
Okay. So I have reviewed quite a few backpacks that will fit your camera gear and your iPad or your MacBook Pro. And one of my favorite companies is called Think Tank, and their URL is Think Tank Photo. They have an assortment of gear. Some of it's really for the hardcore. I mean, they have like pulleys and straps and stuff. I mean, you'll look like you're going into battle carrying all your camera gear. But they have one backpack that I thought was really great. It's called the Streetwalker Hard Drive Camera Backpack. And it has enough space for a DSLR with a 70 to 200 millimeter lens attached to the camera. Plus, it has a really thick padded compartment for up to a 15-inch MacBook Pro. It has a ton of space inside, and the padding is really thick, and it's totally organizable. I don't know if that's a real word, but you can, using Velcro, take all the different compartments out and kind of, you know, reposition them so that it fits your gear very well. And they're kind of expensive. The one I just mentioned, the Streetwalker hard drive, is $230. But if you see the reviews on their website, I mean, they're super highly reviewed. And if you need something even more burly than that, they have an assortment of kind of like luggage type gear that's similar to what I just described, except it holds even more cameras, even more computer stuff. And you can pull it on or pull it around on wheels, just like you do your luggage. You can even check it onto an airplane. They make models that fit into the luggage compartments perfectly for both domestic and international flights. And those models have built-in security. So if you want to, you know, cable your bag to something so that people can't steal it, I mean, you should never leave your bag, you know, alone when it has thousands of dollars worth of gear. But if you want to, like, make sure no one takes it while you're on a train or something, then they have that stuff built in. So check out Think Tank Photo if you want to see what they have to offer. Not the best looking stuff. It's kind of like nylon-y, and it kind of looks like OGO backpacks probably do. They do have a line of stuff that is pretty good looking, but most of their hardcore stuff is just kind of like simple black bags, but they're highly functional, and they're insanely durable. So I would definitely recommend that. And they focus on camera stuff. So thanks for the question, TStop52. Hopefully you guys got some good recommendations out of that. Let's see here. Should we at least mention before continuing, guys, that Apple, Alex, let me tell you a fact. Facts of life.
Tell me. Undisputable
fact right here coming at you.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Apple is now the most valuable company in the history of the galaxy, undisputedly speaking. What do you have to say about that?
Oh, my gosh.
What?
Well, actually, if you take into account inflation, technically, it's not, because in 1999, Microsoft was valued at $640 billion, with inflation would make it $870 billion, whereas Apple is only at $711 billion.
As he adjusts his monocle. So you're saying that fact is actually not true? That there's
a fact. Well, the fact, it depends on how you want to cut the cookie, so to speak.
I like to cut the cookie so I get the bigger piece.
Well, if you're doing that, then yes, Apple's the biggest company of all time. But bigger picture, actual like value in terms of currency and inflation and all that, no. Microsoft is still number one, although they are double the size of Microsoft right now, which is kind of crazy to think about. And they're also, if they were a country, would be the 55th most rich country on Earth. So,
can I read you guys some other interesting facts? So they may not be the most valuable company ever, but they're certainly the most valuable company of today. And I scraped together some factoids from Wall Street Journal. So as far as value is concerned, Walmart is worth about $281 billion. Google is only worth $362 billion. ExxonMobil, $382 billion. And now Apple, $710 billion. Which, if you think about it from a size perspective, Apple is now like 8 times bigger than McDonald's and 2.5 times bigger than Walmart. Like some of these massive companies that have stores absolutely everywhere. It's hard to believe that Apple is so much more valuable, especially McDonald's.
Yeah.
McDonald's is like you can't go to a country on Earth and not see a McDonald's when you get off the train. They're everywhere.
Yeah, but you know, you go to Apple and you easily drop a grand, right?
Yeah.
You can't leave that store without doing it. You go to McDonald's, what is it? You're lucky if you spend
max.
Yeah.
I used to go for the stuff on the dollar menu.
Yeah, so you leave with only spending $3, but you end up with a case of serious gastrointestinal disorder. Explosive diarrhea.
You're right, and they're in trouble now from Shake Shack and you know, Chipotle and all the other all the premium fast food.
Is Subway premium fast food?
I didn't say Subway. Busted it.
I'm like,
is it more Subway locations now than McDonald's locations, though?
Are there really?
Yeah,
that's hard to believe,
dude.
I don't see Subway's
like
around
that. Yeah, Subway's number one. Yeah, for sure.
Like, yeah, there's like five on every corner, man, and
that's
cramped
crazy.
In every Walmart.
Jimmy John's is the way to go.
Yeah. Well, Irfan, guess which company Apple is going to pass up next in terms of its market cap.
They can't pass up anyone, dude. They're already the maximum value of the universe. Didn't you just hear me?
No, dude. No, dude. The Dutch East India Company in the 1700s was worth $7 trillion.
Accounting for inflation. Now, here we go again. Alex got his monocle back on, guys. He's got one of those pull tape calculators. He's sitting there calculating away.
This has been Econ 101 with Professor Alex.
So the what, Alex? You just made that up.
Dutchies India Company from the 1700s.
They were they trade massive. Spices?
The teas.
And spices and
silks. $7 trillion.
Well, they were basically the Halliburton of the British Empire.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that was the height of the British
Empire. Ran everything.
Yeah, it was the height of the British Empire. It was just one company controlled everything, all the distribution. Yeah. So Apple's basically needing to take over the world, and then they'll be the most valuable company.
Well, they're well on their way. Buster, you wrote in your piece this week that college students crave iPhones more than sex.
Yeah, they do.
What are college kids doing these days? They've got their priorities all backwards. When I was in college, right? It was ales, song, and ladies, right?
Yep.
That was what we pursued.
You squeezed in some classes sometimes, if but I had you didn't time, brush it.
Yeah. If I had time, I would go to class once or twice a month.
Dude, have you seen the curves? Have you seen the curves on the six?
On the six plus.
It is
sexy, and I do sleep with it, so that's a good point. Exactly. But if you guys think I'm joking, researchers at Student Monitor asked 1,200 U.S. undergraduates last fall to choose what's in, and not only do they rank iPhone as more popular than coffee, texting, drinking beer, college football, what state do they pull? But Apple's smartphone somehow managed to top the collegiate tradition of hooking up until you get your iPhone, you know, and then you can boot up Tinder.
Okay, see, yeah. I have a question with the survey, though, because they asked them what's in, and are they saying, like, what's in my hand right now? Because I guarantee
you. See, I think it was like, coolest thing?
I'm just
like,
saying,
what's the most popular thing?
Maybe some
is
of these
up more popular than an iPhone. No,
maybe some of these football jocks were just like, "Oh, what's in my hand? An iPhone." And then that's how they answered the survey.
Or what they have, what they have the most capability of actually getting, and they're like, "Well, exactly. iPhone's number one." So we'll put sex at the bottom. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Before we move on to crossing the streams, where we'll talk about the TV shows that we're currently in. Since this is media related, and we talked a little bit about this last week, so Sling TV has started a new service where for $20 a month you can subscribe to a bunch of channels, and it's just like Netflix. They'll give you access on your iPhone, your iPad, on your TV, and they had a pretty nice assortment of channels, including ESPN, ESPN2, TNT, TBS, the Food Network, Disney, and some other channels. And it's $20, as I mentioned, but this week they opened up the service to everyone, and they said they're going to be adding actually a few more channels, and I'm interested to hear if you guys are actually going to put your money down for this service now, because this is actually pretty appealing to me. So AMC, which is the home of Mad Men, Walking Dead, and the Better Call Saul show that just released, BBC America for the Leander Caneys out there, and home of Doctor Who. And they're also going to be adding IFC, which has Portlandia.
Oh, perfect. Yeah.
Sundance TV as well. But you won't have to pay any extra for that stuff. It's going to be included for $20 a month.
Oh, nice.
Buster, what do you say?
Oh, dude. So here's the thing. I've been trying it for a couple days now. I got to say I'm disappointed, to be honest.
Oh, you actually are using it.
Yeah. I don't have cable here. And so I was thinking it would be really awesome, you know, access ESPN. A huge one, but the app kind of really sucks is the biggest problem.
I agree with Buster.
It's always buffering. It never airplays right to my Apple TV. Like I always have to like fiddle with my Apple remote to like get like some menu option off to get it to play. And you can't use another app while you're streaming to your Apple TV. They just need to do a lot of more development with the app is the biggest thing. And I don't think they were expecting as big a load because like, there's some nights where I can't even like load content on ESPN or another channel. I think because too many people are on it.
What about the content itself? I mean, when you're watching it, do they show commercials and stuff, or how does that work exactly?
Yeah, there's commercials.
So it's like
when
Hulu.
They go to a. Yeah, totally. Yeah, okay. And you know when it works, it's good. You know, but I've just found so far it's just you know a little. It's way too buggy. I would tell people not even to spend the $20 yet, and maybe come back in a few months.
Yeah, because that's the stuff, the app and the technology type stuff, that's the stuff they're going to fix eventually.
Yeah, totally. As far as like what the content they're offering, it's perfect. Like ESPN, CNN, you know, I guess Cartoon Network is great if you got kids. And then once they get AMC, you know, you're going to have Walking Dead and Better Call Saul, which are, you know, like two of the best shows now. So it's great.
Okay, let's see here. Who's this? Leander?
Yeah. Of course. I love how he always wants to just say whatever's like being what we're chatting to each other during the show.
Right. Okay, let's move on to the final segment of the show, because I got Leander Caney text messaging me in the undercurrent saying he's got a scoot. So we're going to go ahead and jump into Crossing the Streams. This is kind of an experimental segment. We'll see how you guys like it, and if you do like it, we'll do it again. This is where we talk about the TV shows that we're watching, probably streaming, because I don't think any of us actually have cable. Does anyone actually have cable?
Yeah, I got it.
Oh, you do? Oh, wow. Okay. So since Leander Caney has cable and he's dying to go first, Mr. LeCaine, what are you currently streaming?
Well, I just binge watched five seasons of Boardwalk Empire.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Which I thought started off great, but then season after season, it just got worse and worse until the end. I was like fast forwarding through it.
I'm glad I jumped ship then.
That's the that's a show with Steve Buscemi, right?
Yeah,
okay. It really went off the rails.
What's the premise of that show?
Prohibition gangster, you know, corrupt. He's a corrupt politician.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's Martin Scorsese, isn't it?
Well, he directed like, the pilot, I think. Yeah,
it's like in Atlantic City, and they also have Al Pacino in there a little bit, like when he's in his younger days, and like how they're skirting prohibition and making tons of money. At least that's what the first season was.
Make it past the first season.
And I did it. And then, the second season I started watching and it was just kind of like, and then they killed and it was like, okay, it's...
Oh, right. Whoa.
Let's spoil the whole
spoiler
thing.
Dude, that came out 3 years ago.
I'm going to bleep that. I'm going to bleep that part out. I'm going to bleep that part out.
When we spoiled the 7-year-old Batman movie, people got mad. So.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We got to be super careful. 3 years is still pretty current. There's lots of shows I haven't seen.
It's more than 3 years, isn't it? It's got to be. It's like
I think it's like five seasons. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Really? Oh, okay. Maybe I won't bleep that.
Now I'm gonna spoil the opening 20 minutes of House of Cards season 3.
No, don't. Stop. Don't do it.
Well, I got 2 weeks.
Alex, what do you got?
The first 20 minutes of House of Cards season 3.
Okay. Okay, good.
No, but that was pretty cool. I got to watch a little of that today. No, Better Call Saul's pretty good so far.
Yeah.
Okay. You will atone!
Okay, so Better Call Saul, they launched it after the premiere of, Walking Dead, thank you. And it's the highest rated or the biggest viewed... opening network television show I think ever. So was it worth the hype, Alex?
The first episode was good. It was a lot slower than I expected. I expected it to be a little more gripping. Like the pilot for Breaking Bad is probably the best pilot of television I think I've ever seen.
I think we've talked about this before. It was amazing. The first 10 seconds of the show, you're like, what the hell is going on in the show?
But it was so good. The whole episode was amazing. And like this had moments that were really good, but overall it was kind of like, oh, this could be boring. But then I think the second episode, it got a lot better.
What's the mood of the show? Is it like a wacky comedy where every episode
is salt? Darker. It's
darker. It's kind of like X-Files. It kind of reminds me of a little bit. I don't know.
It's kind of like, you're still waiting to see what's going to happen. But so far I've liked the first two episodes, especially, they brought back a major gangster character from the first season of Breaking Bad, which was like, I think one of the best enemies or like villains in the show. So I was like, really cool.
Okay. Buster, what do you got?
I just finished Sopranos and that was awesome.
I have never seen an episode of The Sopranos.
Dude, if you never watched The Sopranos, dude, you need to watch it. I got my girlfriend hooked like midway through. It's a freaking awesome show. I would put it like third all time on my list.
Wow. Third all time favorite show ever?
Yeah.
That's high praise.
Behind Wire and Breaking Bad.
Yeah, I just rewatched season one of The Wire.
Dude, it's good. Yeah, like season one and two are awesome too.
Right. And I think four is the strongest one.
Yeah. Totally.
Okay, but didn't Sopranos have like a terrible ending? Like everyone hated the ending?
Okay, no spoilers here, please.
The ending is actually, I think it's actually brilliant because it leaves right at the perfect note, leaving you wondering. It's kind of left up to you, the viewer, to interpret what happens next to Tony.
Well, that's why people hate it, isn't it?
I'd rather leave it like right there. Like, don't close everything for me. I prefer that.
Like, I would recommend Breaking Bad to anyone because I felt like the story was wrapped up so well. Like, it was a complete story.
Ridiculous. It was completely unbelievable.
See, yeah. No, but it was a complete story. But Sopranos was like, it's one of the most, hotly debated endings in television history, isn't it? And it's like, I don't want to invest in a show that at the end of it, I'm going to be like, well, that was a terrible ending.
And like, I didn't Google anything about it.
It was more artistic. It was smarter. It was like,
what the
very, very tense.
What happened? Yeah.
Something was going to happen. Something horrible was going to happen.
It's like 4 minutes. They're in a diner and it's just kind of like B-roll footage of them just like chilling in a diner and like this guy's in the background. Is he going to like assassinate
Tony?
You
can't ruin it. Do not ruin it.
And then. Okay, just cut that out.
I'm just gonna put one really long beep in there. How long was that? Like 15 seconds?
Jeez. Yeah. Other than Sopranos, I've been watching Luther, and it's pretty good too.
Luther, I have not even heard of that.
It's with Idris Elba. It's a BBC show, and he's a cop tracking down serial killers, kind of like Dexter, only he's not a serial killer himself. So I like that.
Whoa, spoiler.
And yes, but
it really is not. Yeah,
it's only it's kind of like Sherlock. There's like six episodes a season or four, and they're like an hour long, so it's a pretty short show. Okay. And there's only four seasons, so you can watch it like in a day, pretty much. But it's really good. It's pretty smart. I liked it a lot.
So one of my New Year's resolutions was to watch more stuff this year because I learned from our best of
watch episode. More TV. That's your resolution?
That was one of my resolutions, yeah. I was like, I actually need to watch some more stuff because I never watch anything new. I always keep things going on that I've seen before when I'm working.
You need to finish stuff.
I know. I need to finish stuff. I'm notoriously bad for that. So I was like, boom, I'm going to commit. And I dug deep into a show called Fringe.
Oh, I have.
Yeah.
Okay. When I first started watching Fringe, it's kind of like a science fiction-y type show. J.J. Abrams is one of the producers. The show centers around the Fringe Unit, which is this hidden FBI-like investigative unit that investigates strange crimes and things of that nature. And it's kind of very mysterious. There's all these like crazy like death scenes that happen where people are dying in weird ways at the beginning of the episode. And it's kind of like X-Files in a way. In fact, when I started watching it, I was like, okay, this is an X-Files, almost like an X-Files ripoff, because it starts off with something super weird happening, and then the entire episode you're left wondering, like, what happened? Was that a werewolf? No, it was just a guy who, had wolf DNA because he's a scientist, and he just killed everyone. But about the end of season one, they start building in this kind of higher level story plot that is... it's gripping. It grabs you by your scrot and it doesn't let go.
Oh, I thought you were going to say something
else. Yeah, your scrotum.
It just grabs a hold of your scrotum and it will not let go. And you are pulled in whether you want to be or not. I'm now in probably season two, end of season two. I think I just about am about to finish it. And it's fantastic. Fantastic. By the time you start having these dueling plots happening, I think it's such good writing, and the storytelling is excellent, and they build in all these like mysterious themes that kind of keep you hooked from one episode to the next, because they have like these daily or these themes that go inside of each episode that are resolved in each episode, but then these overarching themes as well. It's on Netflix, and I think the entire show is on Netflix. I think it's over six seasons or something, maybe. And actually, I should ask you guys this before we wrap up here. Where are you guys watching these shows?
Popcorn Netflix.
Popcorn.
Easy TV. On IT.
So you're watching yours on Netflix, Buster?
I watched Fargo and I had to pop out all of that. Yar. Apologies to FX.
That's okay. You're breaking up. No one can hear you anyway. Okay, so Popcorn Time, Netflix. I'm watching some of my stuff on HBO. I think that Leander Caney just peaced out. Yes, he did. He's officially done. That's our cue to go ahead and wrap it up there, guys. Hey, I want to say thanks to Varidesk for supporting this episode. If you want to feel great throughout your workday, Check out Varidesk, V-A-R-I-Desk.com. You're going to feel so much better standing for a majority of your workday as opposed to sitting on your arse. Alrighty, that's all the cool guests we have for you guys this week. If you want to come share your love with us on Twitter, Alex is Alex E. Heath, Buster is BST3R, I'm at Airfon, Leander is L. Caney, and of course, make sure you're following Cult of Mac. This has been the CultCast, the best 30 plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the CultCast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys. Alex, can you give me a character from one of the shows we talked about?
Oh, one of the shows we talked about?
Yes.
Dang it. I can't.
Next time. That was a noble attempt.
What character was that?
I put the spotlight on him. For his big moment.
You could possibly mention that instead of the prophet's story. That's bigger news. And bigger news than the sex story too.
Well, yeah, I just think that we should stories. At least mention that. Well, I took the prophet story off.
Yeah.
Refresh your page, but I think we should at least mention that Apple is now the most valuable company ever in existence.
Oh yeah,
which totally. Isn't actually. Yeah, it's not actually.
What do you mean
it's
not
we
true?
Can't talk about it. It's not true with inflation at all.
Really?
Oh, it's the East Indian Tea Company with inflation.
No, it's not. It's Microsoft in 1999.
Okay, well then you can bring that up, Alex.
Okay.
You love to correct me anyway. I'll just play dumb.
I know, say it in the most snottiest way possible. No, actually.
No, it's actually if you account for inflation.
Make sure you adjust your monocle while you say it to
right.
me.
You would have taken
it's elementary.
101.
You're not an idiot.